Okay, let's start our next talk. Our next talk is by Sue Babby. She's a senior research scientist at the UCLA Center for Health Policy Research. Her research focuses on the social and environmental factors related to physical activity, dietary behavior, overweight, and obesity. She is currently co-PI of a project that examines the association between the availability of parks and physical activity among youth, and PI of a project that examines longitudinal associations between neighborhood environments and obesity.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here in this session. I think it's very interesting to be in a session alongside people from academic as well as non-academic backgrounds. It makes for an interesting sort of mix. Today, I'm going to be talking about the association of physical activity with park safety and park use, and how that association varies by neighborhood racial composition. I have no relationships to disclose. I first want to acknowledge my co-authors, Joelle Wallstein, who's a wonderful graduate student at the School of Public Health and who recently advanced a candidacy. Congratulations. And also Dr. Allison Diamant, who is a professor in the School of Medicine. All right, so research suggests that there are disparities in both physical activity as well as access to the resources that might support physical activity. Specifically, African American adolescents and Latino adolescents have been shown to be less physically active than their white counterparts. They also have correspondingly higher rates of obesity. Research also suggests that the availability of places to be physically active influences levels of physical activity, and that low-income neighborhoods and communities of color have less access to resources that support physical activity. Research also suggests that disparities in access to these types of resources to support physical activity can contribute to some of these disparities that we see in levels of physical activity and, in some cases, obesity rates. And because of these neighborhood-level disparities in access to physical activity resources, what we're interested in looking at is whether the relationship between the availability of these kinds of resources and level of physical activity might vary by neighborhood factors. And when I say physical activity resources, I'm talking broadly about parks, as well as recreation centers, as well as even things like availability of PE programs at school. But in this particular research, we are going to be focusing on parks specifically. So we had three research questions. The first was, does the relationship between the availability of parks and physical activity vary by neighborhood racial composition? We were also interested in what other factors that are associated with physical activity vary as a function of neighborhood racial composition. And also, as a corollary to that second question, are there any factors that were consistently related with physical activity across different types of neighborhoods with different racial composition? The data source that we used to examine these questions was the 2007 California Health Interview Survey, which we call CHIST for short. It's a telephone survey of adults, adolescents, and children from across the state of California that has been conducted every 2 years since 2001. In 2007, interviews were conducted with over 50,000 households in California. In households with adolescents were interviewed directly after their parents gave permission for them to respond to the survey, and also after the adolescent, him or herself, consented to participate. Interviews are conducted in 5 different languages: English, Spanish, Chinese, Korean, and Vietnamese, to help capture the racial diversity of the state of California. And the data is designed to provide a representative sample of the state's non-institutionalized population. And that just means that we don't survey people who live in dorms or prisons or assisted living facilities, that kind of thing. Okay. So what variables were we specifically interested in? Our outcome of interest was physical activity, and Specifically, it was the number of days that adolescents reported being physically active for at least 60 minutes. The question is asked this way because it allows us to determine whether the teens are meeting the current physical activity guidelines, which say that kids should be active for 60 minutes every day. We also looked at availability of parks, and keep in mind that this information is all self-reported, so it's really perceptions of availability of parks. The teens were asked, is there a park within walking distance of your home? And we also asked about park use. So the adolescents were asked if they had been to a park within the past 30 days. And the last park-related question was whether they felt the park near them is safe during the day, and they were asked whether they agreed with that statement. And finally, we looked at things broken out by neighborhood racial composition. In order to look at racial composition of the neighborhood, we looked at the percent of non-Latino white residents in the census tract where the adolescents lived. If there were less than 25% white residents, then we referred to that as a predominantly non-white neighborhood. If there were 25 to 74% white residents, we referred to that as a mixed race neighborhood. And if there was at least 75% of the residents that were white, we referred to that as a predominantly white neighborhood. We also adjusted for some other characteristics: age, gender, race, ethnicity, nativity of the adolescent, household income, parental education, nativity of the parents, as well as the urbanicity of the neighborhood where the adolescent lives and the income level of the neighborhood where the adolescent lives. We had a sample of 3,638 adolescents between the ages of 12 and 17. I'm going to talk about a few descriptive analyses, basically how our physical activity measure and their park measures varied by neighborhood racial composition. And then I'll talk about how the relationship between those park variables and physical activity varied across neighborhood type based on some regression analyses. We have a pretty diverse sample. It's about half male, half female, 34% non-Latino white, 46% Latino, 10% Asian, 7% African American. And in California in 2007, the adolescents told us that they got 60 minutes of activity on average 3.6 days in the last week. So about half of the days they were meeting those physical activity recommendations. We found that the level of physical activity varied by neighborhood racial composition. Specifically, teens who lived in predominantly white neighborhoods were active for 60 minutes on more days, almost 4 days a week, compared to teens in the predominantly white neighborhoods where it was only 3.3 days per week where they got 60 minutes of physical activity. Perceptions of park safety also varied by neighborhood racial composition. Teens in predominantly white neighborhoods thought their parks were safer than teens who lived in mixed race or non-white neighborhoods. Only 20% of the teens who lived in the predominantly non-white neighborhoods felt that their parks were safe during the day. And then also use of the parks varied somewhat by neighborhood racial composition. Sorry, I forgot to switch the slide. But not as much as some of the other factors. So even in the non-white neighborhood, 75% of the kids said they were using the parks, or at least had used the parks in the past month. But it was slightly higher in the predominantly white neighborhoods, where 82% said they had been to a park in the past month. Okay. So there are a couple of things I want to just highlight. This shows the factors that are related to physical activity in the predominantly non-white neighborhoods. We saw that girls engaged in less physical activity than boys. Teens from low-income families engaged in more physical activity than teens from higher-income families. And teens who had been to a park recently engaged in more physical activity than teens who had not. In the mixed-race neighborhoods, let me first talk about those factors that were similarly related, similarly related, specifically that girls engaged in less physical activity than boys, and teens who had been to a park recently engaged in more physical activity than teens who had not. A couple of factors were different in the mixed-race neighborhoods. So Latino and Asian teens were less physically active than whites, and teens who perceived their parks as safe reported more physical activity than teens who thought their parks were not safe. And then finally, in the predominantly white neighborhoods, again, there were two factors that were similarly related. Girls were less physically active than boys, and teens who recently went to a park were more physically active than teens who had not. And then a couple differences. In the predominantly white neighborhoods, Latinos were less active than whites. And also, teens who were foreign-born were less active than teens who were not. Okay. So across all three neighborhood types, we saw girls being less physically active than boys, and teens who had not been to a park recently less physically active than teens who had been. And that was consistent across the three rate types of the three neighborhoods with these different types of racial composition. But actually, let me skip ahead to this summary. There. Latinos were less active than whites in mixed race and also in predominantly white neighborhoods, but not in predominantly non-white neighborhoods. And Asians were less active than whites in mixed race neighborhoods, but not in the other neighborhood types. And finally, teens who perceive their neighborhoods as safe were more active in mixed race neighborhoods, but not in the predominantly white or the predominantly non-white neighborhoods. Okay, so let me first mention a couple of limitations before I talk about what we might want to conclude from this. All right, the physical activity level in this study was self-reported by the adolescents, so it might be subject to some bias, most likely overestimating the amount of physical activity. However, the measure that we used has been shown to be strongly related to objectively measured physical activity, so we would expect these associations to hold, even if the exact estimates of the amount of physical activity they're getting might be a little higher than what they're actually getting. Also, the park availability and park safety measures are self-reported, so they're really more reflections of perceptions of the availability of park and perceptions of the safety of parks, as opposed to what's objectively there and, for example, objective measures of crime and or injuries in the parks. And finally, this is a cross-sectional analysis, so we can't draw any causal conclusions. But because we saw that actually visiting a park was related to greater levels of physical activity across all neighborhood types, then it seems like efforts to increase the use of existing parks is a promising strategy for promoting physical activity for youth across a variety of different neighborhoods. However, we might want to consider targeting these efforts in different ways to particular groups who might be less active, such as Latinos or Asians or African Americans. And I think we also need to do a little more research to understand how these factors that are associated with physical activity and also use of parks vary across different types of neighborhoods, because in this study, you know, we looked at neighborhood racial composition, but only in one way, and you may also want to look at income of the neighborhood, also the urbanicity of the neighborhood. We know from what other folks have talked about that people in urban areas use their parks differently than people in suburban and rural areas, and in rural areas they often don't have parks anyway. So I think there is more work that we can do, but I'm interested to hear any questions you might have about the work that I was just talking about. Yes?
I was struck by finding that in certain neighborhoods, like Latinos were using the parks less than
Yeah, you know, that's a really good question, and it's one that we've sort of been puzzling over ourselves. We unfortunately don't have information in this data set about the facilities that are available at the parks near where the kids are living. And I think it's certainly one possibility certainly is that there might be some uncomfortableness that's more likely to occur in a heterogeneous neighborhood than is in a homogeneous neighborhood, and I think we might be capturing some of that in that mixed race neighborhood, but I'm sure there are other things going on as well. But yeah, that's a good idea. Yes. Yeah, so all of the data I talked about now is available in the CHIS data set. We are currently working on some follow-up work where we're linking some objective information about the parks that are available with the CHIS data set, and also we're planning on bringing in some of these other measures about use of the parks and perceptions of safety in addition to the objective availability of parks. But that one's just getting going.
And so back to what some of the other speakers kind of mentioned was, I think there's a real need for like this kind of high-level surveillance of park use and what people think about their parks and park safety and all that. So I was just curious if you have any difficulty getting these kinds of questions into the CIJS or the other agencies if we could get into bigger things like the VRFS and so on.
Yeah, That is a very good question, and yes, we always have difficulty getting things into this survey, partially because it's designed to be an omnibus health survey to cover all kinds of health issues, health conditions, access to care, but getting a lot of information on any one topic is very difficult, What else we're able to include in the survey varies a lot depending on what our the funders of CHIS are willing to pay for. And in 2007, we were fortunate in that the California Endowment was very interested in collecting some information about availability of parks, use of parks, and safety of parks. The specifics of getting that into the survey, it's definitely challenging. Any other questions? Okay, thank you.
We have about 8 minutes or so left. Does anybody have any questions for the panel? How about it's my party time? I think I've noticed with some of these, when I think of the Park Service or NRPA, I get the sense that there's been a shift towards health and physical activity in the last few years. Do you think that's the case? And if so, and maybe the Trust for Public Land also, what is the driving factor behind this shift, I guess?
Well, just for the Park Service, and then I'll defer to others, I think we're the big lumbering bureaucracy, so I think there is a culture shift, and the fact that we're catching on demonstrates that there's a culture shift. So, like, all the good work that's happening at the local level is just now sort of, we're catching on.
Well, I think... looking at city parks, I think people have been, of course, very concerned about the reduction in funding in city parks and the challenges to city parks. And people make a lot of assumptions about city parks, tremendous number of assumptions about how terrific city parks are and how everybody loves them. But as we dig into these numbers, I think we recognize that most city parks are way underutilized, woefully underutilized. And of all Susan's numbers, the one that jumped out at me, I forget that the the minority folks were 80% scared of their park, and the white folks were 51% scared of their park. So everybody's scared of their park. The majority of everybody's scared of their park. And then, of course, the girl situation is even worse. And that was a very good, it started me thinking, could you have, girl-only sections of parks and things like that? If people aren't using the parks, it's going to be very hard to persuade the mayor and the city council to fund the parks. So the use of the parks is really important, and understanding how people use parks, how they want to use parks, and why they don't is a key factor. So, whether you want to call it recreation, the big recreation, all the things that you do in a park, even just picnicking and things like that, becomes super important. And from, my organization, the basic underlying premise of my organization is to have more parkland, but it's kind of hard to justify if some of the existing parkland isn't really being used to its maximum.
Just looking at NRPA and our programs over the last several years, I've only been at NRPA for 2 years, but I'm very familiar with what their health and wellness portfolio looked like before that. And we have seen a shift just at our organization in terms of, we're not working with, the National Basketball League or those types to give basketballs to parks. Now we're actually doing some policy changes and environmental changes and working on chronic disease prevention. And I think that's reflective of the country that we're living in today with this obesity problem, and that chronic disease is the number one killer. And with Michelle Obama's initiative, the Let's Move campaign that's going on, people are looking at parks as this free and convenient resource, and here we are getting cuts, budget cuts, and you have recreation centers that are being staffed by one person. So there's this disconnect where, when we think about when you were growing up, we used our parks all the time, but today life is different and everyone's playing on their Nintendo DSs. So it's just that realization that we have this chronic disease issue and parks are one of the solutions to that. And I think that's where we're seeing the big shift.
The other issue related to this, sure, a lot of people are playing on Nintendos, and everything that I do, I think about what are our competitors. Those of us who are working in parks, what are our competitors? And we have to be very clear on the competition that we're facing. But the other factor is that back when we were young, parks were much better staffed than they are today. And so one reason that people are scared of their parks is that most of the parks are just empty pieces of land. And it used to be in the cities that pretty much every single park of any size had people in charge of it out there that were sort of keeping it under a certain amount of control, or somebody you could report things to or just feel a little bit more comfortable with. So it becomes a kind of a downward spiral if there's no staffing in parks at all, and I don't mean just recreation centers, but even just staffed playgrounds and things like that. If there's no public authority there whatsoever, it's not surprising that people are scared to go in there. So it needs really thinking through, not just sort of general statements about how we all have to go to the park, but people come up to me and say, oh, it's so nice you're working in parks. It's so nice to be working on an easy issue. But I actually think that parks is one of the most difficult issues, much more difficult than, let's say, transportation, where you're dealing with, car movements. Here you're dealing with people's movements and psychology and all kinds of different users in the parks, and not to mention horticulture and keeping the trees alive and everything else. So it's actually a very, very tough field that needs really careful thought. Yeah.
What are the synergies with the environmental work and partnerships with private parks as well, especially around Richard Lewis' work, nature deficit disorder, and getting people to the creative uses of parks and mental health issues? Anything exciting or innovative going on in terms of that? Because I think the mental health benefits physical activity, all of these are very appreciated. I think that the mental health benefits as well, and the environmental stewardship that goes along with engaging younger generations in being part of the environment in parks is so crucial. So there are partnerships with environmental groups, things like that that are.
Well, definitely the environmental community is a big driver of parks. Sometimes there's issues where the environmentalists actually would prefer to have fewer people in the parks. You know, they don't really focus on that too much, but it's kind of like exactly. So you do get some community battles over, you know, ball fields versus just trails through the woods and take out the benches and, you know, things like that. So even though it's a theoretical partnership, sometimes you have to really sit down and have focused conversations about what are we trying to accomplish here and where can we have quiet areas and where can we have busy areas and the whole issue of city parks being places where you want a lot of people together.
I guess that concludes our session. I'd like to thank you for coming and for an excellent series of talks.